This is the Weekly Squeeze. I'm your talented and humble host, Connell Music, coming at you from the beautiful land of Israel with another episode of your favorite podcast, The Weekly Squeeze. I hope you know what you're listening to because you've subscribed and left me a 5-star rating and shared a link to the show with a friend. Weekly Squeeze, episode 185. Kanayin Ahara, Bigazunt. That's a lot of time spent here with you guys. And I've learned so much, mostly when to shut my mouth. So I'm not going to be talking about things that you expect me to be talking about because I have better things to do with my life. That's why I invited the Kiddush Club guys, the hosts of the Kiddush Club podcast, which I'm sure you listen to because it's a great one, to talk about those people for me. And they will be here shortly to talk about all the things that everybody wants to get to, all the juicy stuff. So don't go anywhere. The truth is you could go anywhere because you're probably wearing earbuds. So feel free to go wherever you want. And let's get into all the things. You know, it's so hard to plan what to talk about because things are moving so quickly and I'm interested in everything. So, I mean, we can sit here and talk about life here in Israel for days and every conversation I have with everyone because we're living in a country at war for 6 months. This is active war, my friends. I mean, I leave the notification, the sound on. The truth is I rarely leave my sound on because I have notifications that come with a siren every time a missile is shot out towards Israel from Gaza, the north, wherever it might be, there's a notification on my phone. And it's nonstop. It's been nonstop. We had missiles in Ashdod, which is right here. We had missiles up north, a massive barrage this morning. Like, you can't be relaxed when you know that terrorists are shooting at school buses still, okay? There was a terrorist shooting attack this morning in Jordan Valley by Yericho. A terrorist hiding in a bush opened fire at a bus with school kids in it. And I saw the video and the bus driver is like, what is that? And one of the kids you hear say, Nirali that Shem Zolkim Avanim. I think they're throwing rocks. And yeah, the bus was bulletproof, but still three people were injured and one in serious condition. So this country is, you know, on high alert. The good news is Purim came and went without any significant events aside for celebrations across the country. And it was a beautiful Purim. It was really a beautiful, meaningful Purim where people were really associating themselves with what it might have been like to be a Jew in a foreign land, in Persia, with a hostile government that had a minister that was whispering evil plans of mass destruction and genocide of the Jews in the king's ear. And, you know, the situation couldn't have been different, that much different than it is now. You know, every Jew has 10 opinions, depending the time of day or what's inspiring them at that particular moment. And everybody wants to contribute to the success story of the Jewish people. The problem is, how do we all do it cohesively? It really takes a miracle. And that's what happened in the story of Purim. Like, the Jews were pulling in every direction. You had Jews going to Ahasuerus's palace, which would be the equivalent of going to Jeffrey Epstein's island. I mean, it was a disgusting environment. And the Jews went and they had Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash there. You could only imagine what Mordechai must have been thinking, knowing that the end of the Jewish people, the destruction of the Jewish people was imminent and people were going to that party. I mean, it must have been so frustrating. But then the story unfolds, the story of Esther and Mordechai and the hidden hand of Hashem that directed everything and orchestrated everything to such a degree and in such a beautiful way that we read about it every year in the Megillah. And it's just such an incredible story. And yes, we hung Haman's sons from the rafters. And around here in Beit Shemesh, we had hanging Hamasniks on every second porch. Well, not that many, but a handful. And I looked at it for a second and I thought, huh, like, wow, that's completely appropriate. But unfortunately, we have neighbors who hang people on a Tuesday morning with their falafel. So the end of the day is that no matter how vicious, cruel, determined, and evil our enemies are, we have Hashem at our side. And everything is going to be just fine. Because at the end of the day, we're all here Everybody's surviving and thriving. People are living it up. I mean, the sheer creativity that I saw on Purim was invigorating. First of all, not one hostage was forgotten. So many costumes here in Israel. The theme was bring them home. Like, it's just front and forward here. It's Purim, but the hostages are not here. It's Purim, and they're missing it. It's already Purim, and still no hostages. And it's already Purim, and we don't even have a deal. And it's just so, so intense and heartbreaking. And I got to say, whatever Israel is guilty of, we are paying the price. And I know that if you look back in history, the price has been much, much greater and bloodier and gorier and more awful. But in this modern era, to see day after day soldiers be killed and the world dance on their blood, on the blood of our sons and our brothers and our, it doesn't add up. It just doesn't add up. Nothing seems to add up. And I'm no mathematician, but I thought things would make more sense. And nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense. The only thing that makes sense is that Hashem runs the world and we know nothing. So just sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Just kidding. Don't relax, because Pesach is coming. And if you're not cleaning, good for you. I'm just kidding. If you're not cleaning, you should be cleaning, or at least thinking about cleaning. Now, I don't make lists. I just plow through it and get it done. And I run a tight ship. Everything here is fresh and clean. But I don't start panicking about Pesach. I just clean a little harder every day. So, you know, from 4.5 hours to 6.5 hours. The point is, life is not easy, and everybody has to be on high alert and on their toes, because the best is yet to come, or the worst is yet to happen, depending if you're a pessimist or optimist. Take it as you will, as long as your meds are balanced. Okay, what's going on? Let's just cover the basics, because even I don't know, because I've been busy being a mother and walking my dog and enjoying what is suddenly now summer in Israel. That's Israel for you. It's like one day you're regretting you didn't take a jacket, and the next day you're like wheezing up the hill, parched, desperately hoping that you either come across one of these kosher Jewish mitzvah fountains that they have here in Israel, or you have to make the tilat yadayim, and you can take a cup and you fill it up with water. They have them around and about. Or someone will literally be on their porch and you'll be like, Efshar kos mayim ani meta. I'm dead. So it's that. It's boiling hot outside. The sun is blazing. Everything is going to be dry to a crisp in no time. Like, it stopped raining. That's it. We're in the fry zone. But it's only, what is it now? March 28th. So, it could suddenly start hailing. So, you know, what can I say? Living here in Israel, it means enjoying the actual land. I don't get why people would come here if they're like not interested in the outdoors. Like, you're fighting for the physical land. Like, sometimes I look at my WhatsApp chats and everybody's busy chatting about sharing articles on Twitter, like all these Hasbara chats. And I'm like, guys, does anyone go outside? And the truth is, I know that people do. I know the answer. Most people who are fighting for Israel, pro-Israel, advocating for Israel, living here, even the soldiers, they'll come back from the army and ask to relax. As a way to relax, they'll go for a hike because they love the land. I'm telling you, I walk here in the mountains, I am mesmerized. I'm mesmerized. First of all, the fact that Beit Shemesh is so beautiful and hilly and breezy up at the top, and you have this 360 view of the entire city. You can see where they're building. You can see the entire Beit Shemesh in all its glory. You can watch the sunset, and there's thousands of flowers, tiny little daisies, these little yellow and white flowers, and tons of them, patches of them, and you have these bright kalaniot and just all kinds of herbs and bushes and olive trees, and it's just everything is buzzing and alive, and it's electrifying. I tell you, it's really, really a gift to live here, and the land nourishes me, which is why I'm out the door the second my kids are up and as soon as they come back from school. Mommy needs nourishment from the land of Israel, guys, okay? It is an important activity here. Otherwise, what are you fighting for? What are you fighting for? We are fighting for Eretz Israel. We're fighting for the history. We are fighting for the people who have lived here before us. We're fighting for the people who are buried in the ground here. We're fighting for the vision of the prophets and the battles of the kings and the prayers of the righteous and the merits of the holy. This land is so much more than just falafel and eilat and the shuk. And don't get me wrong, those are all good things. But, you know, I'm watching Purim and like all these videos where men and women are dancing in the shuk and everybody's having a party and I'm Yisrael Chai and Misha Ma'amin. I'm like, guys, connect the dots, connect the dots. You're literally a 20-minute walk from the Kotel, and there are some people dressed here like they don't remember the laws of the Jewish people. And some of them are pretty basic, you know? So I struggle with that. I do struggle with that because I believe we're in a very perilous time, and it's a holy war. It's a spiritual war. So to overlook that, you know, it stresses me out. It stresses me out. It's hard to be a believer. Otherwise, you can just play politics and blame people all the time and point fingers. But when you know the story of the Jewish people and you're reminded of it through our holidays, you know, holidays make a lot of sense. They really do. Like now that we need this chizuk, Purim came around, it was really mechazik, the nation. It was. It really, it left me with a good feeling, but it also reminded me that we haven't yet written our Megillah for 2024. I don't know when this is going to end. I don't know how it's going to end. I honestly thought that maybe on Purim, Hashem would like swoop in there and give us like a double whammy. Like when you have it, two kids who are born on the same birthday and on your anniversary, it's like we could have found Sinwar on Purim and it would have been just so epic. It would have been so epic. But alas, Hashem wants another Yamta for us. So let's just hold out and hope that it's one that doesn't involve so much cleaning. Okay, let's cover the news because I want to get to the Kiddush Club guys and relax and have a good time talking about all the things. So let's go over it. What is happening here in the land of Israel? I'm just trying to pull up my resources over here. Like I said, rockets were intercepted up north. That means the sirens went off and hundreds of thousands of people went into their shelters as missiles came flying in from Hezbollah. So that's the situation on the Lebanon border. If I'm not mistaken, a Druzy factory worker was killed. Yes, Zahar Bashara was killed yesterday from one of those missiles incoming from Lebanon. So if you know someone who wants to throw a demonstration on his behalf because he's an Arab Muslim, let me know. I'll send the paraphernalia. I'm just kidding, of course. Nobody's marching for him. If a Jew didn't kill him, nobody cares. We have more and more evidence or proof or footage or, you know, straight up facts that 600 to 1,000 Hamas terrorists were still hiding in Shifa. That means Israel went into Shifa months ago, cleared it out, and in the time that they left and went fighting everywhere else, they all came through their tunnels and crept back into the working hospital where they just injected themselves. I heard this. Who called this? I think Alan Dershowitz. He calls it a Hamaspital, or his, one of his kids calls it a Hamaspital. These people are, they have no scruples. They have no scruples. Like there is no low that is too low for them. There's no low. A delegation of political and Christian leaders from South Africa were here this week on a fact-finding and solidarity mission in Israel. So that's great. Listen, at the end of the day, the best way to fight anti-Semitism is for people to come here and see with their own eyes what we're dealing with. Most people who hate Israel have never really been here. They have no idea because nobody ever comes here and hates being in Israel because Israelis are amazing. Everybody comes here and falls in love with Israel and totally gets it. So it's too bad that the tickets are thousands of dollars and that there are always missiles flying here because more people should come. More people should come. And if they did, they would speak up. They would speak up and they would be more bold and brave to defend a country that's doing a fine job of managing what it's up against. It's still Ramadan. That means every single day, thousands of Palestinians, Arabs, come pouring into the old city. And who has to manage them? Because if there was no police there, do you know what? All hell would break loose. It would be World War III, and the walls of the old city would be a bloodbath. So for days on end, for 40 days to be exact, Israel has to monitor the situation, have boots on the ground, have police making sure nobody kills each other, not that they kill themselves and not that they kill Israelis, And of course, scuffles break out. And of course, the press is there magnifying and exaggerating every single minute. And that's just what's going on in the old city, in a tiny little neighborhood. Okay? And it's intense. It is intense. So I'm just glad Purim came and went without a hitch for the most part. So, yeah, Israel has their hands full. Some beautiful videos we saw of IDF soldiers reading Megillas Esther in Chief Hospital in Gaza. And they have a whole control center set up, and I love that. And they're doing a great job, the Army. I'm so proud of these boys. They are so disciplined. They work so hard. They're so determined. They're so proud. Every time you watch one of their inaugurations, their big ceremonies, the tekes that they have when they're initiated into the Army, where they swear in, where they finish their beret march, they're all so excited. It's like so, there's no sense that they don't want to do it. There's no sense that they don't want to be there. Like I even saw Noah Kirel, the pop singer, very famous and successful, and she was wearing her uniform. She sang for the Army, and she doesn't charge. She comes in as a soldier. That's her miluim. That's her service. I guess that's the arrangement they have. She's a working artist. She makes a lot of money for herself and for the country, for taxes, so on and so forth. So you have to be reasonable when you're working with big artists. But the point is, she was so proud to be in her uniform. She was like, look at me, I'm in my uniform. No, I'm in miluim, she was telling the person filming her. I'm not just here to perform, I'm in miluim. Like, I'm doing my service. She was proud to do it. And that's just such a incredible thing about the heroes of Israel, true heroes of Israel, fighting against all odds, against all popular opinion, to do what's right and to serve Hashem at the same time and to read Megillah in a war zone. In a war zone surrounded by barbarians, savages, all of them. But yes, the eternal people, Am HaNetzach, Lo Mefached, Miderech Aruka. The eternal nation is not afraid of the long road. And it's a very long road and a very unpleasant road. And a very difficult road, but we're walking it, and we're gonna walk it together. We're gonna walk it together, and we're gonna pray for each other. We're gonna pray for our soldiers. We're gonna help each other. We're gonna do the best we can to disperse the good news about Israel, the heroes. We're gonna try to avoid the people who are a little over the top and unhinged, if you know what I mean. But otherwise, everybody's just gonna show up and work their hardest, because these soldiers are such an inspiration what they're up against. At the end of the day, we don't have hostages yet. You know, all bets are that they're in Rafah and that the IDF is going to hopefully get to them, but it's a lot of pressure. It's really a lot of pressure, and we need a lot of prayers. Did I tell you that I went to the Kotel? No, I didn't tell you. So I told you I was going. Okay, so I went last week to Yerushalayim. And I live streamed the communal, the worldwide Shema Yisrael prayer that was conducted at the Kotel. And I had the privilege of being on the rooftop of Eish. Eish HaTorah is the institution, the Torah spreading Kiruv network that they are. They have a big, beautiful, very valuable building that faces the Kotel, and they host events on their rooftop. So they had Jamie Geller hosting. And they had, what's his name? The guy, I was so embarrassed. I'm not even going to remember now. You guys are going to let me know. He's that inspiring guy that Meaningful Minutes always sharing. He's very like vibrant and he speaks right into the camera. So he was hosting this thing with Jamie. Anyways, 4:30, Eish goes live. And exactly at 4:30, there's Mincha at the Kotel. And Mincha at the Kotel, Sephardi style, on a microphone. And I felt so bad for Jamie because, you know, she's wearing her earbuds and she has a teleprompter and she has to go live. And this music, they were singing Mincha and it took 40 minutes and it was really loud. And I was just thinking, I would imagine that Eish has done this before. They've done this many times before. Someone should know whether Mincha happens at 4:30 or arrange something, but I guess it was out of their hands. But Jamie did a fine job despite the pressure and the noise. And she spoke to hostage family members. So when I came into Eish HaTorah, I was storming on my phone and I turned the corner in the old city before you go down the stairs to the Kotel. And right there was Rachel Goldberg Polin, the mother of Hirsch, who was taken by Hamas, kidnapped with a bleeding stump of an arm after they threw a grenade into the shelter that they were sheltering in. So she hasn't heard a word from her son, nothing. They have no idea if he was treated. They have reason to believe that maybe he got medical attention, but they haven't heard a word. They don't know where he is, and it's horrifying. And then another woman spoke. She was, I think she was Swedish, but now living in Israel. And her father-in-law was kidnapped. He's one of the oldest hostages. And she was so angry still, obviously. She was just like, everyone needs to repeat it, Hamza, five times. Bring them home, bring them home, bring them home, bring them home, bring them home. She was just like so overcome with emotion, I guess sitting by the Kotel and having everybody hear her message to the world. But what are you supposed to say? At this point, you're just begging, like anybody who has connections, anyone out there who could do something, pull some strings, please have mercy and bring our family members home. It was heartbreaking. And then it finalized or concluded with the Shema Yisrael at the Kotel where, and this is something I never experienced before. I really enjoyed it. Me and the 2,000 people watching live on my Instagram account, My Beautiful Land of Israel. The link is in the show notes. If you do have Instagram, follow. If you don't, good for you. And then we did Shema, and they were these big horn players blaring these trumpets, and it felt so, it was like the shofar, but it was a different tone. It was almost like it was more catastrophic. Like the shofar is almost more musical and yearning and hopeful and tshuva. These horns were just like, mayday, mayday, like Hashem, help us, save our ship. We need to bring our hostages home. And it was so creepy because being that I was on the roof, I was able to look over and see the Arabs on the mosque, on the plaza over there, like walking around. And I was like, this is so crazy how we live. It's so crazy. Like we're blowing these horns and they can hear them. And they're doing nothing about it. They're the ones who can do something about it. We're praying with them side by side. It's so bizarre. Ay, Hashem should help us all. Hashem should help us all. Okay. Let's just run an ad. How about that? Let's just run a weekly squeeze advertisement. Hang on. Let me play the music. This week's episode of the Weekly Squeeze has been brought to you from Rockets to Roses. That's right. Rockets, actual missiles that were shot off into Israel. Well, you can wear them around your neck and for a good cause. Did you know that over 35,000 rockets of terror have exploded here in the land of Israel? Well, Yaron certainly does. He lives a stone's throw from the Gaza border, and he makes beautiful jewelry and Judaica out of rockets. I am wearing one around my neck right now. It says Rockets to Roses, and it has a beautiful flower with a red ruby stone in the middle. And for me, it's a symbol of hope. It's a symbol of hope for a peaceful future where we won't have rockets. We'll only have roses. So go ahead and head over to their website, theisraelboutique.com. Click on Rockets to Roses. And for like $50, you can get this rose charm necklace that I am wearing, available with a military or sterling silver chain. A beautiful flower pendant. This piece of jewelry is a true fulfillment of the biblical prophecy, "You shall beat their swords into plowshares." So go ahead, treat yourself or someone you love to a piece of jewelry or Judaica from theisraelboutique.com. Worldwide shipping, money back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Rockets to Roses. .com. All right, you guys remember Eitan from episode 184. Well, he just put out a new clip called Wake the Hell Up, and it went viral on Instagram, so I'm going to share the audio here. And yeah, consider this a PSA.
I knew a guy, met him in 2000 while working together at an ad agency in Boston. He actually asked about Israel a lot. At the time, there'd been relentless Hamas suicide bombings, killing our people, doing whatever they could to literally rip us to shreds, blowing up buses, restaurants, shops, and it was incessant. And he didn't understand their hate and how we lived with it in our lives. What option do we have, I'd say? We have to fight terror, but also continue. And they can't beat our spirit. To him, terrorism was foreign, see? He'd never been abroad, not once. He couldn't wrap his head around it. What I remember about him was his beautiful naivete. I was actually envious of it. That said, I tried to explain how America couldn't stay isolated forever, that Israel's fight wasn't just ours, it was for anyone who didn't want Sharia law. It wasn't restricted to the Palestinian quest for a land of their own. It was entwined with radical Islam, an ideology with no mercy and no borders, one that doesn't discriminate, not even amongst those it supposedly fights for. His name was Bill Weems, and he was a warm, funny, and decent family man. He was also a passenger on United Flight 175, steered mercilessly into the World Trade Center by Al-Qaeda on the morning of 9/11/2001. I didn't know Bill a long time, but I'll never forget him, and he'll always be my friend. It's been 23 years now. The number of people being killed in the name of Islamic radicalism continues to grow everywhere. You can hear anti-Western speeches by radical Islamic leaders, anti-Semitic chants on the streets of Europe or on campuses across the United States even. And these words, they move people to hate. And they also target young children and teens, those who are most susceptible to lies. It's all well thought out, taught, and funded. They're global. They're organized. We live with the threat of radical Islam here in Israel. October 7th was our 9/11. But you, who watched all of that savagery and death from a distance, don't you forget how it came home to you, to the Boston Marathon in 2013, to the London train and bus bombings in 2005, the Paris Charlie Hebdo massacre in 2015, the Pittsburgh Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018, the ongoing killings in Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen, to Iranians in Iran in the form of state-sponsored terrorism and totalitarianism, to Syria and Iraq, where over 1 million people have been killed in civil wars. And these murders are a direct result of Islamic radicals sending a message to anyone standing in their way on the road to an Islamic caliphate, one that'll be worse than hell on earth, where radical Muslims kill not just Jews, but people of other faiths, their own people, anyone who doesn't bow down before the perverted form of Islam. These terror organizations are thrilled because the media is putting the spotlight for all the problems in our neighborhood on Israel. They're happy that most people don't see them for who they are, even though they're out there for all to see. They can rest easy knowing that most ordinary, young, uninformed people aren't even aware that they're being manipulated to hate online with videos and propaganda intended to make them furious. Videos of dead people sell. The context of how and why it happened doesn't. Terror groups like Hamas and Hezbollah know full well that in this crazy world we've become, facts don't matter. Just emotion. So they show Gen Z what they know they won't like out of context, and they know that they'll respond to. Here's oppression, here's apartheid, here's genocide. Even though none of that's going on, and the situation is much more complex than they'd have you believe. Young people today want a just and fair world while watching it all via their phones on TikTok 24/7. The short attention span phenomenon means they don't dig deep enough to get different points of view and apply critical thinking, which is, well, critical. So they can see things for how they truly are instead of believing narratives delivered literally and ultimately by jihadists, who are pinching themselves at how naive people are, believing that radical Islam doesn't affect them, that it's someone else's problem, Israel's problem, and that in fact, Israel's to blame for it. Radical Islamic leaders love how ordinary citizens aren't pressurizing their leaders to crush them into oblivion as they brainwash entire communities in their neighborhoods. They've got ordinary citizens in the palm of their hand, not knowing that they're being played. But you know who I'm sure doesn't love any of this? Bill's family. It's 23 years now since Bill was murdered by Islamic jihadists. But Hamas, Hezbollah, other like-minded terror organizations, they're still here. And their killing is far from over. I hate to break it to you, but it's coming to a place near you sooner than you think. And that's not fear-mongering. That's just an inconvenient truth for you. So please, wake the hell up while you still can and start doing something about the kind of world that you want to live in.
That's some powerful stuff, right? I told you, Eitan, he has a good head on his shoulders, that's for sure. Go ahead and do me a favor and follow him. Follow him on Instagram. His Instagram is Eitan, just double check, Eitan Chitayet underscore words. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes for you. All right. It is time for my favorite guests ever, besides for Candace Owens. I'm just kidding. The host of the Kiddish Club podcast. So without further ado, the Kiddish Club guys. Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to the Weekly Squeeze.
Hey, thanks for having us again.
My pleasure.
Ooh, what's that mug? Wait a second.
Yeah.
I changed my podcast artwork 3 times, and every single time I ran to get a new mug. At some point, my husband's like, could just use the same mug. It's okay. Nobody cares what your mug looks like.
We don't have a mug. This is what I'm using. I'm using foam. You see this? And this is not healthy. We could use some Weekly Squeeze mugs.
I'm just feeling a little self-conscious because my listeners know this. I recently gave up my studio for my 16-year-old to have her own room. And that makes me self-conscious. So I have to like hold up my mug. Like this is still an official, you know, top performing podcast despite the environment I'm recording in.
Well, you're in Israel, right?
Indeed, I am. Lucky
so
me.
What is it called? What is the room called for air raids? What is it called?
The Mamad.
Right. So a lot of podcasts I know coming out of Israel, they use that Mamad as the studio.
Well, that didn't turn out like that because I don't know exactly why. I don't think I needed a soundproof space, and maybe didn't really cross my mind that I was going to keep an entire bedroom for a studio. Whatever the case is, I came into this room, I put up the panels, whatever, whatever. And now I made the ultimate sacrifice. Yeah, go ahead. I hear something crackling.
Your mic is crackling. It's brushing on your sweater.
Should I disable original sound?
No, that's not the problem. It's rubbing against your sweater. It's still going to run, I think. Take off your sweater, like I always say before you record. We go through this every week, Hanala.
That's when we do in person. In person, we do the sweater off because it gets very hot where we record.
Also when we do it on Zoom because it rubs up against your sweater.
Okay, this is already TMI. This whole podcast went off the rails. We're going to have to restart. Ay. I tell you, so many people have gone off the deep end lately.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, it's all good. It's all good. All right, here we go. As I was saying, so many people have gone off the deep end lately, and that's really what I wanted to talk to you guys about because I'm not looking to gloat in anyone's fall from grace. But on the other hand, there is a certain pleasure in saying, you know, we saw that coming. I told you so. That's deplorable behavior. And when you behave like that, everything falls apart. So we're going to touch upon the Candace Owens thing. Otherwise, we're not even mentioning names because, chas v'shalom, we're not here to do any Lashon Hara except against Candace Owens because she really deserves it. So, yeah, honestly, Erev Purim, someone sent in my Weekly Squeeze WhatsApp chat, someone writes, Daily Wire has parted ways with Candace Owens. And I immediately posted it on my Instagram account with Chag Purim music playing. And my instinct was, wow, off with her head. Like, Vashti's out.
Yeah, we saw the same thing. I was checking everywhere on the interwebs trying to prove that this was true because I said, this is too good to be true. And I actually saw Ben Shapiro. He was on Piers Morgan. And they've become friends, and Pierce started asking him about it, and Ben was having none of it. He's like, can I ask you about Candace Owens? He goes, you can ask. He's like, okay, so what happened? He goes, as I said, you can ask. And he kept pressing and pressing and pressing, and Ben gave nothing, no indication.
Well, we all know they could destroy each other single-handedly on each other's podcast, and I hope for our sake that they don't suck all the oxygen out of the room and make the next 3 weeks of the news cycle about their bickering. Because, like, nobody wants to hear it. I kind of feel like Ben Shapiro just doesn't want to deal with that. Because this could never end. She has the biggest mouth ever.
100%. But,
well, it's also not professional, right? You have to have a level of professionalism, I suppose, in the industry. Like everybody else, I'm glad she's gone. I think she's going to land on her feet somewhere else. It's not like we have seen the last of Candace Owens. But I also don't like it. The like too much gloating about it because we're Jews. It doesn't feel right.
Well, one thing I wanted to point out is that Ben actually said, he told Pierce that he is not part of management at the Daily Wire. I didn't know that.
He said that before.
He said I'm an owner. Yeah. So he said, so the decision for her not to be there has nothing to do with him because he's not in a position to fire her.
I'll tell you, I don't think it's even relevant because, like you said, she can land on her feet anywhere and have a show tomorrow that everybody's listening to, regardless of the Daily Wire.
Yes. She has 5 million followers on Instagram, 5 million on X. She's going to be fine.
But she peddles in talking condescendingly and critically about other people. That's the nature of what she does. But God forbid you should look at her with a raised eyebrow and she'll go apocalyptic. Like, she cannot take what she dishes. And I think that's what really gets on people's nerves, because if you're going to sit up there on your throne with your microphone, she has advice for everybody and their grandmother, how they should be and what they shouldn't do. And this one's a man and this one's really a woman, and whatever conspiracy theories she's onto that day. Well, then you're going to be scrutinized. You're going to be under the magnifying glass. And everybody's going to be talking about you and why you're such a big anti-Semite. And she is.
No question.
She really, really is.
No question. And I think part of it is that she's not that intelligent. I think she is very, she's good at what she does, yes. That doesn't mean she's an intelligent person. I mean, we all saw the interview with Ami Kozak where she said, you know, I don't think it's right that Israel forces all the Muslims to live in the Muslim quarter in Jerusalem. And he's like, what?
In the Muslim ghetto.
Right. And he's like, what are you talking about? She doesn't know a lot, but she makes like she does. And she sensationalizes
I think she knows a thing or two. She's a good debater. She's very, very talented. She knows, I mean, she does what she does. She talks. It's all about her mouth.
Great talker. I agree. She's a great talker. She doesn't know a lot. She does not know a lot.
Well, she certainly doesn't have her values in the right place.
Oh, definitely.
Concerning, because I don't know a lot, but I have good values. My mother always says, doesn't matter. You could bluff your way through the podcast. You were raised right.
Right.
And I feel like if you're raised right, okay, so you're not so articulate, but at least you have good midos. She doesn't have good midos.
No, for sure.
Not a good person.
But let me ask you this.
You know what's funny? Is that when she first came onto the scene, we all identified with her. I don't know if anyone remembers that. But when she first came onto the scene, it was a bunch of years ago, we kind of had that shared value system with her. And I think that's what got her the job at Daily Wire.
Yeah, well, that's a good point, because this is a perfect example of what happens when your head gets too big and when you feel almighty, when you have so many people soaking up your every last thought, regardless of whether you truly thought it through. Her sycophants, to them, she can do no wrong. She's like the word of all reason. And that's why she's like throwing around religious phrases now so she could get all the religious fanatics. Listen, I'll just say about all these individuals who lately seem to have gone off the deep end, you know, it doesn't matter what your argument is. It doesn't matter if you're right. So, you know, my mother always said, just because you're right, it doesn't give you the right. And when people are more preoccupied with the things that you implied and the words that you chose and your behavior, then you've lost the point. You've lost the plot. You've lost your audience. You become a clown show. And that's, I think she's emotionally immature. She's running on emotions like some rabbi, some of you might know. You know, not, you know, intelligence is there, but it's being run by emotion.
I think she's also in terms of what you said before, she does know what she's doing in terms of she is using the fact that, I mean, look, let's face it, that we know about the anti-Semites on the left. It's very obvious who they are, you know, Tlaib, Omar. I mean, it's very obvious. But we have to acknowledge that there's a big chunk of anti-Semites on the right, and she's tapping into that. And they love her. I mean, if you look, whenever she posts something, she's truth to power, to, you know, to the cabal of Jews who run the world. She's the first one speaking up. And she knows that she's doing that. You know, at first, I was giving her the benefit of the doubt, like everybody else. I said, you know what? She doesn't, you know, maybe she's just misinformed. And as you go and you look, I mean, she liked, you mentioned the rabbi that she's been in the debate with. And I'm sure you saw she liked that comment of one of the people who told the rabbi, you know, you're drunk on Christian blood. Like, you cannot thumbs up
you
that.
You cannot like that if you are not an anti-Semite.
Right.
There are certain things that are just undeniable.
Exactly. Like, you crossed the line there. You are now an anti-Semite. That's it. You're done.
But I do think that there was something that happened. Like, there was a switch that was flipped in Candace's mind. And I think it happened around the time that Kanye was. Yeah. That's when it kind of happened. I'm not clear about what it was that turned her against us.
I think it was Kanye.
I think it was that crazy rabbi. I think enough. Listen, she was really, you know, when she says she was bullied by the Jews, she really was. Like, nobody left her alone because we held her, like you said, to such a high standard. We were so devastated and disappointed in her. Like, we gave her a second chance and a third chance and a fourth chance. Like, please redeem yourself. Please redeem yourself. And she was like, nope, still an anti-Semite, still an anti-Semite. So she got a lot of attention. You know, a lot of people who listen to her are Ben Shapiro fans. They just, it's like a natural progression. You're listening to Ben Shapiro, you listen to Candace Owens. And then to hear some of her, like you said, her right-wing conspiracy theories about Jews, like, it's like, girl, stop it.
I mean, if you would have listened to the way she defended Kanye, it kind of doesn't come as such a surprise, right? Kanye's whole thing is, and he clarified this later, is there are specific Jews who are very bad in Hollywood and they're evil and they control a lot and they did me wrong, whatever. She defended that at the time. And even as recently as a week ago, she was still saying those exact words. She's mimicking Kanye's words. She never said anything negative about Kanye. She never disavowed anything that he said. She was totally on his side. And I think she's shown her true colors.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see where she ends up. I gave her a shot. I think ultimately she lost her way. And this is just, again, a result of very talented people losing their way because of social media. I really think it's because of, and she's very into social media. She'll answer her DM. She likes the feedback. She feeds off the feedback.
Oh, for sure.
So, yeah.
For sure.
So, and she knows that a tense emotion sells. And she knows it's much easier to manipulate your listeners with anger because people love to commiserate when you're complaining and you're venting. So, yeah, I think she for takes sure. advantage of her listeners and she uses social media to attack other people.
Well, like, I have a different
question.
She's
morally superior, yeah.
Wait, before we get to the question, I think from a business standpoint, they're all laughing at us because there is really no such thing as bad publicity.
No, it's laughing just, all the way to the bank.
Exactly. And you know what? That goes for everybody involved. And even though it comes out as a scandal and people are talking against it and people are outraged, yada, yada, it's just their stock automatically goes up.
No, fact. It's 100% true. If you've been watching her followers since she's been let go, it just keeps climbing and climbing and climbing. So because she has so much exposure. I actually wanted to ask you, Hanal, because you're in Israel. We've been having, and we covered this on our last episode. What is it? 125. What is the reaction of you guys in Israel? So there's a lot of people, there's a lot of Jews in the United States who are blaming Bibi for Joe Biden's about face on Israel. And they're saying that, you know, Bibi should have stepped down. And because Bibi's not stepping down, that's why America turned. Do you guys feel like that? Like, what's the feeling over there?
I mean, listen, Bibi is the longest serving prime minister. So there's a certain comfort with him at the helm, him at the steering wheel. And I think considering how unstable the situation is, it is, you know, we're at a state of war and another soldier died a few hours ago. And it's still, the heat is still really cranked up here in the Middle East. And people feel comfortable with Bibi because he's a great diplomat. He's the guy who can sit at the table with all the big world leaders and hold his own. And, I don't think switching governments now was ever an option. It was never on the table. So the whole conversation is moot. The bottom line is Bibi's prime minister now. What's going to happen to him later? We'll see what happens to him later. Right now he's here until we finish the war. Israel doesn't trust anyone else to get it done. And the war cabinet seems to be working hand in hand in making sure that eventually Israel will be completely safe.
Do you think that Bibi should step down?
After the war, definitely.
You do?
Yeah, I do. And I like the guy. And I support him and he's great. And I think he's the best prime minister ever, Bibi Melech Israel. But, and you know, we could get into all the reasons, but ultimately to have such, this is not just this, also the Lag BaOmer travesty that was also on his hands.
Right.
You know, at some point, this is your part of your legacy. He claims to be a man of faith. Hashem gave him quite a zetz to have such a terrible thing happen on his watch, especially as he's like winding down his career as an Israeli politician. Like he could have left a hero.
Right.
For the most part, you know, he could have passed through the legislation for the Supreme Court. Who knows what? He got the government that he wanted. Everything was going great. And then this happened. And you can't deny that he should have known.
Right.
So, yeah. When it comes to America's relationship with Israel, I think Alan Dershowitz has been spot on.
Agreed.
And he's calling it like it is. He's like straight up. And he's here in Israel right now. He's Yeah, he's right here. He went to Barry.
I got excited. I thought you were going to be like, he's right here, and here he is right now, Alan Dershowitz.
I didn't say he's not. Alan, we'll be with you in a minute. We're with the Kiddush Club guys now. No, he's amazing. And he said straight up, for America not to stand by Israel, you know, we saw what happened in the UN, it's immoral. He said, it's immoral, and I will not vote for a party that doesn't support Israel over Hamas. He's like, I won't physically be able to bring myself to do that. So he's like, he's not blaming Bibi. You know, he can rant and rave about Bibi all day long. He's a Democrat after all, but he's not. He's like, when you come here and you see what they did to Israeli people, how they started this war after October 7th, before, you know, October 6th, there was a ceasefire, and they came in here and they did all those atrocities. Like, what does anyone want from us except for us to win and eradicate these horrible people who would do this to you too?
Right.
So it's just like Israelis just look at it in a very black and white way. Like, you don't like it, you know?
Do you think the Israelis are still as supportive of Trump as they used to be?
I mean, I don't know. I don't think they...
Well, look at what he's saying, though. He's saying that this would not have happened if Trump was president.
Who's saying that?
You know, that's
Trump.
Trump. Trump is saying... Trump
is saying... You don't say.
That Trump, this would never have happened if Trump was president. That's what he says. And I feel like that will probably speak to a majority of Israelis, because I think that they know that there's some truth to that.
I don't know. I don't know. What I've learned in the last five and a half months is that Hamas, the Palestinians, the Gazans, whatever you want to call them, they have no existence. They have no substance aside from hating Israel and investing everything that they have into destroying it. You know, you see those tunnels that didn't happen overnight. That was years and years and years of, and millions of dollars. Trump, not Trump. It doesn't matter. They were focused on one goal. These people are obsessed with killing Israelis and destroying Israel. That's all they think about. Something else would have happened. I know Trump isn't like, what would he have done differently? I think he's, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't buy that.
I agree. Where do you live, by the way, in relation to the South? Are you anywhere near?
I would tell you, but I'm not sure you're not a terrorist. I'm
very,
just kidding.
Very smart.
So we live, I would say 40 minutes, 35 minutes from here to Sderot, door to door, if there's no traffic, if you take the basic back roads.
Oh, wow.
And also Beit Shemesh is high. So we hear a lot of the booms, a lot of the explosions. I hear them all the time. Let's say Hamas was planning to come as far as Kiryat Gat. Kiryat Gat is 20 minutes from here. So we're not considered south. You know, we're close to Yerushalayim as well. But
you're close enough to feel it.
Feel the war? Yeah. But interestingly enough, Beit Shemesh actually doesn't get a whole lot of rockets. I'm not sure why. Maybe because, I don't know, our luck?
Or because they're just not great at the aiming situation.
No, but there's nothing special here. They target like Tel Aviv, and obviously a bunch of the rockets fall in the Gaza envelope because that's the, you know, the Ashkelon and Ashdod. And Beit Shemesh is like, what are you shooting for? Are you shooting for Jerusalem? Very rarely do they target Jerusalem because the mosque is there.
Right.
So it doesn't really, they don't really target in this direction, but whatever.
So
target.
But I mean, you guys get the air raid sirens and you have to go take cover and all that, right?
Yes, we've had quite a few. But I don't feel like this war is about me. I'm not going to lie. I don't feel this, like, I mean, I know everyone feels this war is about them in some way, but, like, I've been very blessed. So my kids are going to school. Everything feels okay. My husband works in America. He's not in the Army. I don't have siblings in the Army. I'm not baking for soldiers because my reputation in the kitchen precedes me. So I don't feel, I don't feel like I am, like, this war is affecting me so deeply. I'm just invested in it because I talk about it and I do pro-Israel Hasbara, if you want to call it, on social media. But other people have been through so much. So, like, you know, it pales in comparison to my experience here.
Where do you think we're headed? I mean, as an Israeli, are you actually an Israeli, by the way? Or are you just an American living in Israel?
No, I made Aliyah.
Oh, you did?
Full-fledged Israeli.
Yeah, she's from Crown Heights.
I'm not from Crown Heights. My mother's from Crown Heights.
No, not originally?
My mother's from Crown Heights. I grew up in Miami.
Do you ever... I'm just going to ask you, because I always ask any of our American friends that are in Israel, do you ever feel like, you know, I kind of wish I was still in Miami?
Oh, you don't know me at all. I walk every morning for an hour with my dog in the mountains of Beit Shemesh, and I am mesmerized, and I do my hispodadut, and I thank God every second, and it's all worth it. I look at the flowers and the view and the fresh air, and I know it sounds like cheesy and everything, but I am so grateful that I live here. I wouldn't change it for anything. The fact that we're surrounded by Mishigayim, by crazy terrorists, I mean, it's not pleasant. And I'm a little, no, and I am upset as an American that we got to this. You know, you used to be so proud to be American because America always did the right thing. And now you're like, wah, wah.
Yeah. Well, at least, you know, in your defense, well, not in defense of living there. So, there are Mishogayim over there, but at least over there, you know who the enemy is. Over here in the States, we don't know. You know, like Candace Owens now, all of a sudden, she's an enemy. And I could be walking on the streets, and this I've mentioned this on Outkast, is I was hit 3 times in Manhattan for the crime of wearing a yarmulke. For no reason. Most recently, a few weeks ago.
What, physically hit?
Physically, yeah. I was physically assaulted several times.
Really? Assaulted? No way.
Yes. Most recently, a few weeks ago, when we were actually on the phone discussing the cast, I went shopping, and a guy just, he attacked me. No reason. Absolutely no reason.
By the way, I was checking out today in one of the kosher stores, and the cashier, I mean, I don't know if you could call it assault, but she definitely threw groceries in my direction. I'm just saying, it's not all sunshine and roses here in Israel. You might get assaulted by some,
okay,
you
but
know.
She didn't do that because you're Jewish. Why'd she do it? Is there a story behind
she's
that?
Because she's a cashier, right, and I wasn't moving fast enough.
Because you were haggling for the price. You were haggling, and she got upset.
No, I can assure you I wasn't. I hear you, though. I do hear you, though. But like I said, I really just enjoy Israel. I think it's such a beautiful place to live, and I love the seasons, and I love the people and the culture. And like, the war is for me personally just like an inconvenience, and obviously devastatingly sad.
Sure. It looks like the airlines are back, right? United and Delta. So I think the tourism industry is going to jump up again. We've been talking about doing a show from Israel. We're actually trying to make it happen.
Oh, you must. First of all, I actually went to the Shema Yisrael thing from last week. Mm-hmm. So I'm friends with Jamie Geller, and I texted her. I'm like, should I come story? She said, yeah, come to the roof, and you'll story me, and you'll put the link on Instagram. So I went to Aisha's roof, and I live streamed the whole Shema Yisrael at the Kotel. That is a great
Amazing.
Place, by the way, if you have connections to do a live podcast with the Kotel behind you.
Oh, amazing. Amazing.
That's crazy. Yeah.
We'd have to transition to video first, but I like the idea.
Oh, you guys, I forgot. You're faceless.
Right.
Wow. So you got this far on your vocal talents alone. Wow.
Well, we're not totally faceless. Yeah. We released a video over Purim of me in costume. So, yeah, you could go. You could be
so
eyeing,
so now they know
that costume. You could see. Definitely can see my mouth.
So now
now people know he's not AI.
I could assure you, you guys are not AI. You're 100% natural. But 1 second, you said something before that made me want to get into something else. But, you know how that works.
Yes.
Listen, as far as the world and Israel and who's going to be at our side or not, and I told this to one of my friends in Hasbara, you know, we text each other when we get all these bad news because, you know, people are cuffing in it. And you know, it's intense because you think, wow, what if America really abandons us? Will we be able to finish this war? Will we have enough ammunition? But at the end of the day, the God of Israel doesn't need America or Biden or Kamala Harris or the Squad or any of these people to help him win this and show the world that the God of Israel is strong and on the side of the Jewish people. He never needed anyone before. If we have to go at it alone, like between all of us, like does anyone think we're winning this because we're big and mighty? Like the Jewish people are, we're David, like we're David and Goliath. So
nothing changes. Yes.
Nothing. Like we're going to be standing here with our rock and our, what's it called? Our slingshot.
Yep. Yeah.
If we have to.
Speaking of Hasbara, how do you feel about Alon Levy?
Okay. I'm laughing because today he was actually officially fired. He's been suspended until now.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
Shared something on social media within the last couple hours where he was doing Zumba in Tel Aviv. And he said something like, if I'm suspended, I can't go on the air. I might as well do Zumba in Tel Aviv. And I was like, okay, I guess that's an option.
It's one way to spend your free time. Yeah.
and it was actually a funny video. So how do I feel about it? Listen, he was terrific. He was like everything we've always needed for an English spokesperson for Israel. He's witty and he looks good and he's single and he's charming and he's on the ball and he's articulate and everything was perfect. I think he got a little big for his britches. You know, you look at Daniel Hagari. I was telling my father, the spokes guy for the IDF. The guy doesn't break a smile. He doesn't drip a sweat. He comes out. He says his piece. He goes home, and that's it. He doesn't make sketches. He doesn't make memes about eyebrows. You know, he does. You know, Elon Levy. From what I heard, he applied for a reality show.
Did he really?
He applied to get a reality show. Now, I'm not saying that's the reason he was let go. And Israel Bechlal makes a sport out of firing people, from what I understand. Like, they're like, oh, it's the middle of a war. We finally have a great spokesperson. What should
Let's fire him.
Let's fire him. So that's just like, and they were saying, we should sign a petition. And we have to sign this petition. And everyone who knows how Israel works was like, we don't do petitions. In the history of Israel's politics, a petition has never done anything. Israel doesn't do petitions. Right. Stop it, you know?
We have to keep the enemy guessing.
So,
you know?
I mean, I suggested a reality show where we have a bunch of talented young people who want this position to be the spokesman or woman of Israel. And we should do like a Survivor-themed show. Where may the best man or woman, you know, and then have all these journalists come in and like throw the most ridiculous things and people have to be quick on their feet. What do you mean you guys are not eating the babies for breakfast, lunch, and supper? We have evidence. We have proof.
That's one thing. Alon was good on his feet, man. He was great.
And I think Michael Rappaport should be the spokesman.
No, not even close. Not even close.
Come on, he's not hilarious?
He is, but...
Love him.
I love him. He's great. It's just it would be 90% beeps, basically.
But you know what? I never fault him. Like, please don't stop speaking that way. Everything he says is like so spot on. It's also the inflections.
Authentic.
It's the nuance. He doesn't say the F word the same every time. He uses it each time a little different. And like, it works so well for him. It's so expressive.
But don't discount the British accent from Alon. Don't discount the British.
You could
say the dumbest thing in the world with a British accent, and all of a sudden it's like, I think he's right. That actually makes a lot of sense.
Look at Douglas Murphy. No one ever tells him it's not Hamas.
Yes.
It's Hamas.
Yes, yes.
It's not Hamas.
He's been great.
But because he's Douglas, he's great. But, it's like, I feel like, how could anyone not defend Israel? Like, why is it such a challenge? It's like, all the facts are on our side. Let's believe Hamas. It's like, it's
mind-boggling, by the way. And you know what? In a way, you can see, like, the hand of Hashem in that alone. This is what he wants. He wants people to think that, like, he just wants world opinion the way he wants it in a certain sense. And because it just defies all logic.
It's baked in the cake. It's part of people's DNA. It makes no sense. It doesn't align with anything else. All the facts. It's like doing math and adding the numbers and then, it's a different result.
No,
and everyone's like, okay,
I
math is subjective.
I think it makes total sense. We talked about this in the past. It's very simple. If you look at the world, look at the Nobel Peace Prize winners, 25% or more were Jews. the Jews represent 0.01% of the world population. How do you explain that? How do you explain that if you look at the charities worldwide, the Jews are overrepresented, way overrepresented, for contributions to medicine, to science, to everything? Jews are way overrepresented.
It's not a contradiction, though. That's just that adds to the argument.
No, but imagine for a second. For a second that you're a guy looking in from the outside. At that point, you have two options, right? You could say, okay, well, either the Jews are really something about them. They've been blessed. I don't want to use the word chosen, but there's definitely something going on with them. That's option A. Option B is they're evil.
They're practicing Talmudic rituals.
Rituals, exactly. Right. And that's why they're able to get this. You must choose one of the two. You must.
I was going to say, and then there's some rabbis who get up and they're like,
exactly.
Just make everything better. They're like, exhibit A.
Just remember, no negative. There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah.
That's what I think his mind was doing.
You know what I was thinking also, like, now at this point, like you've seen it all. Like you've seen every type of Jew possible. Like all the kinds of Jews you've seen. If you still like us, great. If you don't like us, whatever. It is what it is. Like we've all been out there.
Yeah, definitely not doing a great service to us, though. I will say that.
Do you think that it's important for Israel to have a spokesperson? Do you think that this war wouldn't have engaged people the same without Ilan?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm offering my services. No, I'm kidding. No, we definitely think, I think he brought a lot of credibility to everything that he said, from his accent, but the way he explained everything. And no matter what was thrown at him, he was very articulate in his responses, always with facts, always with numbers. He was great. And like you said, the facts are on our side. The problem is you need to be able to present those facts on your feet quickly,
right,
in a way that people could understand. If you can't communicate the facts, then it doesn't matter if the facts are with you or against you. Nobody's getting them. He was a master at getting those facts across. And I think the next person that they bring, if they're not really, really skilled in communication, and they have to be really smart also, which I think he is, both of those things, I think it's only going to make things worse. Chas v'shalom, I hope not. But we see what's going on. I mean, there's talk now, London, coming out of London, that they're thinking of stopping all arms shipments to Israel, Canada doing the same. And there's a lot of talk for the United States to do that. God forbid that should happen. But the more people you have, the more PR, the more good PR people that Israel has,
we need to feed all the Elon footage into like an AI model and like spit out like a bunch yes, of pro-Israel's, you know, spokespeople.
That's
because it really.
Idea.
But at the same time. At the same time, Hanala, I think you're really right. A lot of the things that he did, it surprised me. Like, it was almost as though, like, he became very playful. He became very out of the box. And, you know, as a government spokesperson, like, you have to kind of fit into that box.
Yeah.
And he was really, like, out of it, which was doing good, it was doing great. It was getting results. But I also think that was a, like, if Israel needed something to hang their hat on, he gave it
to
them.
Well, Bibi's the perfect example of how to toe that line of being friendly and being knowing how to laugh at a joke and being natural and also being like a perfectly poised politician. Like, Bibi doesn't break a sweat. He doesn't go off script.
No, he's amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I mean, not to get into politics in terms of liking Bibi or not liking Bibi, I think he's a master statesman. I mean, you said it before. We actually posted on one of our accounts, if you look at his, if you go back, search for his debate that he had when he was young, he was like 25 or 30 years old. You can find it on YouTube. Search for, I think, Ben Nitai. He goes in with a pseudonym, and he's debating a Palestinian. You see, even from then, he was amazing.
Really
amazing statesman. It's a shame, like you said when we started, it's a shame that he could have gone out as one of the best prime ministers ever, and now he's going out.
But
you know,
he didn't listen. And like, you know, I saw a video where he was in Bnei Brak, I think a week ago, and they had like these, you know, when they have from rafter to rafter, all these yeshiva students and the rebbes, mm-hmm. and Bibi came and he was wrapped in a talis and he held up the Sefer Torah and all the Bnei Brak guys were cheering and whistling. In a sense, like, he's held to a higher standard because he had yichidus with the Lubavitcher Rebbe many times. He you know, he knows the Tanakh and he has deep ties to Israel and its history. So he's also appreciated as like a spiritual leader in a sense, But at the same time, you know, like he doesn't wear his yarmulke all the time. And sometimes he might have ended up in a treif restaurant while on vacation somewhere. So again.
No, he's ended up in a treif restaurant on official business.
No, you're like
also,
the prime minister of Israel. There's no, you know, like you can, again, like you can't dance at both weddings. You can't dance at both weddings.
100%. You know, we recently, we're going to be releasing a special soon. We interviewed a survivor from the Nova Festival, and he's not from in any sense of the word. And he brought it up, not even us. He said that he came to New York. He said, since I've come to New York, I've been wearing a kippah. He goes, I don't know why. I'm not dati. I don't know why I'm wearing it. I also haven't eaten on kosher. I also don't know why. So it's that Jewish neshama that, you know, that calls out. And I think you're right. I think Bibi can do a little bit more in that respect.
And, I mean, it depends who you ask. You know, the chilonim here, they hate his guts. They'll say the opposite.
Right.
But
which, by the way, that might be a good thing. Meaning he has the following he has, and he was able to rise to this position because he could kind of dance at two weddings.
Yeah, because
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because it's I think it's worse if, like, the Haredim are not going to respect a prime minister that's completely secular, but the Chilonim can still respect a prime minister that will put a talis on a Yom Tov or say a bracha, because the most Israelis are traditional in that sense and they get it. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
but at
I
the same
right.
time, you know, look what happened to Sharon. He gave away, he was in a tremendous prime minister. He did excellent things for Israel. He was a fierce warrior. He fought. He was a true hero. And then he gave away land and he ended up in a coma for 6 years. So I think at the end of the day, it comes down to this. You know, we could sit here for hours and talk about all the politics, and there's so many podcasts, and I spend way too much time listening to everyone's analyzations and assessments and analysis and whatever. But at the end of the day, the whole story here is supernatural. The Jewish people's story is above Teva. Nothing here is going to make sense. We're not really controlling things. The only thing we can manipulate is our mazel by doing good things and mitzvahs and helping each other and Avos Yisrael and all those things. Everything else, you know, the God of Israel, well, he has a lot of surprises up his sleeves. So
absolutely.
I don't worry too much.
Absolutely.
All right. Before, well, one second.
So
you can't leave yet.
On,
you,
by
one
the way.
More second.
Uh-oh.
Before I let you go, share something that you've seen recently that's just like either brought tears to your eyes or restored your faith in humanity. I'll give you mine first. Mine was a really cute video, Erev Purim, of Israeli, I don't even know how to call these guys, but they were hanging on the side of a hospital, Ichlov Hospital in Tel Aviv, dressed up as superheroes, delivering Mishloach Manos to patients, children that were in the hospital and couldn't leave for Purim, and that's what they do every year. And it was just such a beautiful reminder that there are people who will hang from the side of a hospital just to bring a kid a Mishloach Manot bag and bring joy. So it made me smile.
I think mine was the exact inverse. Seeing kids in Israel and really around the world dressed up as IDF soldiers, which is not something you see
Thank
a lot,
you.
You know,
Thank
year to
you.
Year.
I was talking to my friend about that. I just want to get into that for 1 second. Because a video went viral on Al-Quds. Al-Quds is like Hamas's, you know, Gazan's, whatever, COL Live or whatever, Vus is Nias, Quds Network. So they post a video that some high schooler puts on TikTok where a bunch of Chiloni students are dressed up like soldiers and they have some Palestinian guy in the middle and Harbu Darbu's playing and they're acting out whatever exactly what's going on here. And what is it? It's good against evil. It's the Israeli army, the IDF, the defenders of Israel fighting against terrorists. Like, okay, but you put it on Al-Quds Network, you flip the script and you say, oh, look, they're teaching hate and they're teaching their kids to bully Palestinians. And it, you know, it creates this whole narrative.
Yeah, we taught them that, meaning... Like, that's all we highlight is the fact that they teach hatred in every way, shape, and form that they can against Jews. But I just think to see kids wanting to emulate that, I mean, when you think about it, the soldiers of the IDF, they're the people that really put themselves in harm's way. As much as Israelis are in danger, like, these people are running into the fire. I mean, and to... to see children emulate that and want to be that and want to defend their country and their people, to me, that was moving.
Listen, these guys are incredible heroes, and I just want to underscore for anyone who has any doubts, because even any of us could get affected by all the fake news. But the fact is that this whole thing, calling it a genocide, at the end of the day, fewer civilians have been killed in relation to combatants, obviously, in this war than in any other modern war in history, okay? Israel is doing a far better job in protecting civilians than any other country, United States, Great Britain, Canada, any other countries have done. And for AOC to stand there and hack a Chinik about genocide, you know, it's literally a blood libel.
Not only that, the 30,000 people number, that 30,000 number is out of thin air. It is has no basis in reality.
It's not relevant. It doesn't matter. What we know is that these boys are our brothers, our fathers, our sons, our neighbors. These are good kids who would rather do anything else, whether it's dancing in India or learning in yeshiva or raising their kids, than go deal with these barbarians. So, you know, to think that they have nothing better to do than to make life miserable for Palestinians and to kill babies, like everyone just wants to eliminate the terrorists, find the hostages and get the hell out of there. It's like no one's having a good time. I always say nobody wants to kill babies. Like the least the IDF.
100%.
You know? So yeah. So yes, the guys are great. That's a beautiful thing that so many costumes. I loved it. I did love it. All right. What about you? What is something that...
Okay. I would say, so I'm really a sucker for anything. Anytime I see the IDF, so like I have one of my favorite pictures is you see an IDF soldier with a Gemara and he's doing Daf Yomi in his spare time. So seeing the IDF dancing in Gaza, celebrating on Purim, for me, it literally brings tears to my eyes. Literally. I'm not just saying that. And I just imagine like what they must be feeling and what it's like, because we're just reading about it and seeing it, but they're living it. And just nothing but respect
for them. What could be better than living a life with purpose and with meaning? Look at the state of affairs around the planet. And it's safe to say that we're doing pretty well here and we have a lot to be proud of. So, yeah. Guys, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us again.
And I'm just going to put it out there for all the listeners. You can head down to the show notes. There's links to the Kiddush Club podcast. I highly recommend it. And I never recommend podcasts because I'm also competitive and I'm not trying to give anyone else the downloads. But they have a great show and they're always entertaining and it's a good time. So subscribe to that. And we'll have you guys back on, hopefully, sooner than later.
Thank you.
So there you have it, episode 185 of the Weekly Squeeze podcast. Check out my show notes to order your Roses to Rockets necklace. A link to the Kiddush Club podcast is also in the show notes, where you'll find a link to Instagram, where you can follow my beautiful Anna Visual and Eitan from episode 184. Hope you enjoyed the show, and I will see you next week.